Put up the sound a little bit.
All right, hello.
That sounds a lot better. Ellie Yancey.
Hi, how's it going?
And Alexis Plank.
Hello.
Okay, we're unfortunately sharing a mic, so that means that those out there should be just because we're past 10 doesn't mean you shouldn't be sending clicking on the boo thing on the website and giving us donating money to help us, because we could definitely use another mic in the studio, because I have more poets than mics at the moment. Let's just tell everyone that right now. So go ahead and start reading your poem simultaneously for a second.
My life has
love me like all dreams. The people.
See one. Okay. See one of them. You can't hear one of them. So that means you must call in to donate when you get a chance. And if you want to call in, the phone number now would be 503-231-8187. But I'm going to, I was told to keep the introduction brief. All three of these fabulous local poets have performed at the Ink Noise events, both at the Jade Lounge and also at the other earlier venue. Is that correct? Or am I...
Just a Jade Lounge from each.
Okay, but that's fine, because the Jade Lounge is where it's going on now. There's a lot of, and several of you have also read it, The Hour That Stretches.
Yes.
And yes. And you're all being published in the Ink Noise Review very, very soon.
Correct.
Yes.
Do you know which issue yet, or when it will be out?
The issue.
I don't know.
The issue.
Number one.
The one.
But
the
do you know when that one. When it might be released?
Yes.
When?
No.
Okay. When it is.
All right. So now I'm going to step out of the way and let Lou, did you want to read first?
Sure.
Okay.
Love me like all the people who had to hold my head together after the concussions. Scoop up my body and use your arms to tell me I am still real, but only if you have it in you. Be an echo off the blacktop, the slapping of sneakers and all of the worms under this aching earth after my vision is filled with that endlessly hopeful spring sky. Run at me with purpose and loosen those lips to make my name ring out as a real human in the gymnasium. I can only think on the different shades and textures of basketballs as I lay on my back and wait to see if my lungs still draw breath. Let your heartbeat go steady for me, darling, because mine falters all through long nights. I can't bear your consonants, and let's not even mention those wide aching vowels with their hollows that beg for the intervention of my two strong hands. All this hurt doesn't have a rhythm or cadence, so I fake it and throw out words that clunk around a forgotten ribcage to make you feel something. Everything rattles so hideously today.
So, Ali, do you have a piece you'd like to perform right now?
Yeah. In my dream, I was a guardian of dreams. I walked tall and light through tide pools, each strange story wetting my ankles, their sunrise colors safe below my shadow. I know it was fiction. Whatever I am, I guard only shame. When I lie down, the truth quiets and I forget. In my dream, I'd hidden it, tucked it away in a gold-lit pool to find it again in a better time. I've lost my way back. When we lie down together, our bodies molding new contours, we seal up my truth and shame, leaving room only for honest skin. We all find reasons for lying. I lie to keep dreaming next to you.
Alexis, do you have
I'm ready.
Okay, you have a poem to lie next to that one.
So I wrote this one today, and it has no title. However, I did see on a bathroom stall, someone wrote, "My girl too was okay." So maybe that will be the title. My life has recently asked for new rules, a policy change of sorts, one may say, a reevaluation of self, one may call it, a decision prompted by the repetitions of the universe, the minuscule recurrences, negligible, insufficient, outranked by lowercase letters and risk of infection, the Roman alphabet, all ascenders and descenders, clipped to ropes and mountain faces, and reaching long across the lines of paper, the grocery store, and the ATM waiting for a single receipt. New order prompted by one rule of thirds or another, divided by three and asked three times. And in the course of 48 hours, if you are approached by specificity three times or more, you have to give in. You have to go to Powell's, and you have to purchase Why Men Love Bitches.
Lou, do you have a response to well, I don't know.
I wish I did.
Go ahead and take us somewhere else.
Yeah. I'm not good with the funny poems. I don't have a lot of humor in my poems, unfortunately, but that was really great. And I also don't title my poems, so I'm just going to read them, and that'll be fine. The summer was dying when I met you, because I used two hands to kill it on another coast that hurts to speak of. I was covered in scabs and bruises from a fight I can't recall, except for all those morning-leaning fragments, shattered glass dreams catching light. I confuse bravery with blurred vision, but in the hazy, weeping heat, you always stood solid and let me fill my vision with you. I waited for the nights I could trace your skin with bare skimming fingers, but even in your bed, my hands shook for want, and a spare tendril of hair was enough to set me ablaze, thighs shaky, trembling. I only waited to see what record you would put on next. The light was changing when I realized I loved you, our shadows growing long. The sea air still hung to your hair, the same way I held fast to your chest on the couch we barely fit into the back of my minivan, with the doors wide open to catch a breeze I couldn't notice because you so fully filled my cells. I want all the sand that fell off of your insoles that afternoon to hang in a frame on the wall, that I may remember your specific smell while soaked in sun and spare windswept blue hair. I made you home in the autumn, razor blade at ready. I wanted to carve you a space in my two arms because this flesh has proved easy to dispose of. But the curve of my skin and muscle was made for the shape of your head. So I buried all the sharp things when you taught me I didn't have to be whittled and crowned my shoulder blades with kisses. It is winter now, and we are cold, but your cheeks still taste and smell the same, so I can go on walking at length with such a sweet reminder tucked into my right boot. I sit perfectly still on weekdays and wait for the moment I am in bed with you and our bodies find each other in sleep, in dreams, in thirst, in hunger, and fit together like the whole world is what we can contain in these hot sheets.
I also don't title most of my poems. And I can't manage to write poems quite as long as that, so mine will be rather short. There is a certain beauty in youth. Wide eyes and long lashes, the smooth, full cheeks. Even in tears that spill over raw pink skin, there is a certain beauty in youth. The scarred knees and grubby nails and tangled hair and adventure. Even when bright eyes are mischievous and stare without shame, in nightmares and questions, there is a certain beauty in youth. Slumped shoulders hide a fragile ego, and a knowing sneer protects a bold heart. Even though heavy-lidded eyes tend to stray, and tongues have a lewd disposition, with a cigarette between rouged lips, lit by stolen turquoise lighters, there is a certain beauty in youth. There is a certain beauty in age, laugh lines and wizened eyes, salt and pepper hair. Even when the body is not what it once was, there is a certain beauty in age. Leathery fingers and wiry eyebrows, larger bottoms and set ways. Even with skin pulled taut over cheekbones and folding gently under the chin, in slippers and stories, there's a certain beauty in age. Shaky hands reach to comfort. The fragile bones creak and shift. Even when the bowels deteriorate and teeth sit on the bedside table, with lucidity becoming rare, the last recognition that brightened your face, there's a certain beauty in age.
The urge to clap for you guys is a little hard to suppress.
Yay, good job.
We are allowed to clap.
Oh, good. Yeah. Nailed it.
Good job.
It is strange to live near a body of water that has no tides, to see a shoreline not affected daily by the moon, but on a larger scale by elements that affect us, agriculturally, economically, emotionally. In the drought years, more pebbles, more sand, more space to lay and less river to swim in. The astounding perfection of a high water line too far away for waves to touch. In the harder seasons, the longer winters, when the clouds sit low and the rain comes down and the snow comes down and the water comes down from the mountains rushing into the low places, cutting new shapes, not because it wants, but because it is. We look at the sticks strewn, the logs and branches and boulders, moved from a high place and left somewhere new, and we see destruction. We see shattered homes and dismantled villages. We see the lines and shapes no artist's eye could invent. Nature does not see the first flood as an end, but as life happening, the rearrangement and redistribution of materials. There is no mourning, but simple reaction to survival. Squirrels will store, and the beaver will still build his home every summer to watch it wash away. Does nature feel heartbreak? Or is that an invention of the 12th century as well? A byproduct of romantic love? A human condition that our caveman forebears never experienced? Another of our religions designed to keep the clergy eating meat 7 days a week while the common stay vegetarian for God. We are creatures of obsession and destruction, build in the name of forever and demolish because we can't help ourselves. If we could tie a rope around a building and pull it to the ground, we would because we could. Some strange reaction to our needs, our desire to capture and still. My immortality more important than yours. But nature knows stillness is a lie. There is no true stillness, only each body made to move in its own way, in its own time. Every tree stands and sways and falls. There's no heartbreak in the tree, no desire to pull itself from the river, to return to the hillside, to become an acorn again. It does not ask for a long arm, a hand, the last touch of fingertips before the waterfall, before breaking on boulders, before rushing through the gorge. There's no fear in the tree, and it does not long to be still. The gray torrents of a winter storm, a momentary state of existence, because one day the sun will come out again, and the river will shine gold again, and the water will be calm again. And the tree will find itself in the perfect lines of the season's high tide.
Sorry, I felt like clapping again. Okay, Lou, did you want to?
Sure, I have a short one. These ever-curving lips only bend to consume you. You swear I can never look fierce, but I promise I will eat that weak heart of yours in a single silent gulp, and I won't waste a drop of that ignoble blood, no matter how metallic the taste. I dream of all the shitholes I'm doomed to inhabit in my dim future and watch my legs grow strong with the stomping out of whole fully formed apartments, but it won't mean a thing without a stranger complimenting their form in the summer sweating center of Central Park. You asked to kiss my eyelids once, but I only consent if I could draw blood from the secret spot that ached for me between thumb and index finger.
Mm. All right. She's a prowler, all right. Hips gliding through the figure eight her weight hangs on, suspended by hunting sinews. She smells the hot blush of fear and adoration flutter up my spine, up to lick my gelid lungs, up from that cavern where leaden stomach and high sex share a fire. She muses over my paralysis. I steal for her decision. Survivor's curiosity pins me down. She knows I question my escape. The slow blink. She doesn't even look me straight. I follow her gaze, fixed right through my gasping sinews, through to the light lying across my back. Oh, to be hunted again by the finest muscles swimming under predatory skin. But she just slides past. The swing of her, the mean of her, just saunters on without me.
And now I will cough into the microphone. Tulips to turbans. If I came back from the dead, I would plant a garden. Crossed the river, forgot your name, and returned to a doorstep untitled, I would still crawl home inside the dryer, waiting for you to become unlost. You, my permanent chalky mouth, as Saturn sits at the end of a slingshot and waits to return. I can see her. I can hear him ready to spin through my ears the things that I need. But in the meantime, it is north against south, and it only matters the flag you wave, the color of your wool, the way you steal a chicken from my ovaries, and the way you crack them like Sunday's omelet. And all I really want to know is where do hummingbirds go in the winter? Because this wasp on the window thinks it wants out, and I promised to shit with the door closed.
On that note, I will be asking those of you out there listening who have not become KBOO members, feel free to call at 503-231-8187 and donate to support KBOO and become a member. It's awesome being a member. I'm a member. I donate $10 a month, and it's an EFT. It's really easy. But yes, if you'd like to support Talking Earth, if you love Talking Earth, if you love any other show on KBOO and you just have not become a member yet, feel free to call in and support us at 503-231-8187. And with that, I'm going to start plugging other events that are going to happen in the next month or so. I believe there are two Ink Noise reviews that are set up in the beginning of March. And any of you know about them? No? Okay, so I actually, I'm cheating. I'm looking at my Facebook page. So there is an Ink Noise Review Master Picks, which I'm not really sure what that means, but and Susan DeFreitas, and which means she's featured, and then there's a whole bunch of other people invited. That's kind of the way those work. And that's going to be happening at the Jade Lounge on Friday, March 7th at 8 p.m. And then on Sunday, March 16th, Ink Noise Review double headliner with Sage Cohen, who's been published. I mean, she was getting published in big magazines when I first got to this town about 10 years ago. And then Maxwell Falk is also performing as a headliner, and that's also the Jade Lounge, Sunday, March 16th at 7 p.m. And I believe. Well, I also got a event thing for nominate Doug Spangle for Oregon Poet Laureate. So that would be awesome, especially since Doug Spangle used to host this show. Do any of you know Doug Spangle at all?
I don't.
No, he used to he was involved. I mean, Curtis knows him, so he used to help out with Rain City Review, and he used to host a long time ago. He used to host this show on Talking Earth, like 30 years ago, before Walt started. Oh, we have a phone caller. Oh, I might have to actually take a pledge. So feel free to go start reading poetry again. Blue, I think it's your turn.
All right.
Okay, Boo.
Okay. There is only me and the crooked pavement that leads to your dim tower.
Patrick, yes.
Gray sauntering in time that is not winter or spring. The sea rolls in. And still, it is miles away from your deep-set eyes. She brings the thought of high tide to the staid kitchen and the apartment you share. It was two nights I burrowed in and down to get closer. I lay as still as I could and focused my brain, that loose, wet, sloppy thing, on turning in on my limbs and crawling inside of you. I want to live off of the vines you eat for breakfast, but you shit them out in tough strings I can't chew through, and so I choke in the morning. But without the certainty of death, I am just left breathless and blue. Blue. You don't even like blue. You whisper about green things in the dead of the night, and her hair sparks electricity, white and hot. In response to your fetid mouth.
No, I need to remember your address.
Under your bed, I can even feel you move towards her, wordless, and not a single expression playing at your soft lips.
Okay.
Lying flat, I know it's all an act we must get through. I don't even tremble anymore when I hear wet noises.
Yeah.
Moist squeals echo off the floorboards and travel up through my splayed fingers. I tell you no when she is finally gone. The air hangs like you are alone, but I can feel the chasm where her energy has been, and no matter how I fold my limbs, I won't fill it. You rest your eyes, and I rest my soul by finding the loose floorboard and building a nest you won't ever find. I know now that it's imperative you can't find it. I don't count on you leaving in the night, but it happens, and then I am free to float amongst sheets and breathe in the air that knows your voice, to draw it deeply back into lungs pink with sheer pulsing. Even in my sleep, I remember to go invisible when the mists lift and you climb back. The sound of you sleeping is too sweet to bear, and I stuff my ears full of your discarded clothes.
So I did take a donation. So I'd like to thank Barbara out there.
Huzzah.
For donating. And then, so I get to interrupt again and announce more events that are going to happen in the next month or so. And next Monday, there is going to be a event at Show and Tell Gallery event at Three Friends Coffee House at 7 p.m. at Three Friends Coffee House, working artist interview assembly with Camille Perry, who I believe is also read at the Jade Lounge. Now I'm spacing things. She's also read at the
Ink Noise.
Thank you. Feel free to interrupt me as soon as you can. Doug Spangles asking to be nominated for the Oregon Poet Laureate. That's not really an event. Oh wow, we got another phone call. So okay, go ahead and read another poem.
All right.
Low-key, Boo.
A small jade. Reflective and blemishless, beautiful resting in her mediastinum, her heart cavity. The perfect stone. She carries it because it is precious. Its worth so appreciable compared to fragile striated tissue, the myocardium, the heart. A glass case for a rib cage, perched on a crooked vertebrae pedestal. I am the one that shatters, though, when I try to break in, just to hold it. And warm it between my palms. There are some who can spur her gem into pulsing, but palpitations scatter hairline fractures across her skin, a delicate lace of heliotrope contusions, bruising.
Yeah, if you want to, yeah.
Fifth of scotch, ready in the glove box, the only way a stone can float. The worst is when she forgets she wants to be happy.
You guys should keep calling in. He's not paying attention to us. I feel like Dad is not at home and we can paint our nails in the house. Radio pirates over here. Okay, this one is called Freedom. Like imagining someone walking through the door and shooting you twice through the eyes. Like imagining a banana peel roadblock on the favorite sharp corner where the cliff drops on the lightning strike tree. Like you took the responsibility from my leaky hands, out of my meatless hands. Like the snake fills my throat and says, forever now, forever now. I keep balcony doors open, hear the city, but four floors up, I only see white brick, mold-ridden window rims across a one-way street. I cannot see the street. Four floors off a one-way road, they say it wasn't the height that killed you, but the angle of your fall. I say it wasn't the angle of your fall, but the fact that you didn't want to live anymore. A balcony too narrow for a person, a balcony meant for a potted plant, a recluse in pajamas and grandmother's socks. Didn't want to live four floors above a one-way street downtown. Downtown when I wrapped you in my arms, when I pulled you naked inside the cold morning of my jacket zipper, the cold of my buckle, on the button of your belly, on the emptiness of your belly, on the hunger of your belly, the zipper halves on your ribs. Proof of a point I don't know, can't know, will never know. A freedom in a loss of power steering, a bottle under the brake, a freedom in the less, when I told you I would build a cabin and only press my zipper into you.
So yes, I'd like to thank Chris, who is going to donate online, and he also was very appreciative of your poems. Yeah, I think he was mentioning the ending of two of them. I'm not sure of, you know, I think the raunchy ending of two of them. I don't, something might have gone over my head, I think. Or I didn't hear him. Given that I'm trying to actually announce events, there's a train coupling industrial poetry micro slam happening Wednesday night at St. John's Booksellers at 7 p.m. I'm not really sure what that is. It sounds like it could be really cool, but that's going on. And then there's a couple things with Christopher Luna in Vancouver, enriching our lives with words, workshops, and open mics. And I'm not sure if it's just a workshop or what, but that is at 12 p.m. at Washington State University Vancouver Writing Center. It's probably a workshop. On Friday, February 21st. Okay. Go ahead and feel free to kick me off the stage now.
All right. I have a poem. When she sits quite still and is 25 years old, she finally understands the feeling she got while hiding at the very center of round clothing racks as her mother shopped in circles around her. She wants to be found out, but only shakes the finest of fabrics with her imprecise bone structure, and so stays silent while not knowing how to move an indefinite shade. There are a string of disorienting experiences that make her feel like a child lost in a mall. Like maybe the right grip on her crushable fingers could make any difference in the sight of her specific suffering. Like maybe at this picnic, while early summer sun seeks to flay her in front of company, she can lay on her back and call up the thought of a mother, like a certain smell could calm such rapid heartbeat fire. That laying on the grass might be enough. Or what if she pumped her legs against the rays that sought speaking up among such heavy-tongued northwestern boughs? She will wake up next to a girl she can't bear to describe with words, and will sit erect while sipping coffee and not know what to do when faced with a camera. She doesn't know the proper framing for a face she has yet to touch in this naked, gleaming bedroom. And so she will only make acute angles with the Wednesday gloom. None of them dare to acknowledge with their young heat.
All right, this is called End. The woman has awoken, opened her salt-withered eyelids to discover her shifting skin's stained, glowing molten, cracking with fever, gasping for air. The beginning of our last days sways in the twisted ribbons of her graying kelp hair. Rot invades the roots of her teeth. Her shoulders curl like tired fern tendrils under the plague of our swarming black-booted armies. The bellies of her children are tight, churning mercury as they roll and rise. Each pink lung spoilt, a limp mouth. Littered across her holy mountain skirts, she rushes to gather them back into her womb as sparrows collect string when the sun blushes white and sap hardens inside the dense, straight spines of heartwood. Her crude, slicked hands demand, "What have you done?" Our every whispered denial, a gruesome creature, seething from her iciest depths, inciting her tempest and gale with the resonance of a collective sulfur hiss. The woman has awoken, raging with the force of all the bones of men. She wrenches the lifeline from our numb, blanched hands. We will be sorry soon enough.
Yeah, ominous. Also, Step Monster, if you're listening, I'm not smoking. I'm just not taking my vitamins. In regards to a man losing his son, rubbing eyes to kaleidoscope finds bright symmetry. I rub longer until red turns black. Until Elvis comes back to life, until dead gray hair grows down past rattling hips. I know what you have in there, your mother. I know you, so I know what that is. You should unwrap it, show it to me. Your mother used to sell bones to my father in San Antonio, navel gazing, and today I lost my nail for the first time in 11 weeks. My middle finger on the left hand, a planet, where balance comes so cheaply, a reward system in exchange for an address, and I stood in line praying her miscarriage, praying, and now I wonder to who, and now I see the me in you, and the you that failed to make your inside match your outside, who was asked to empty her, to make her insides match the look between lips and eyelids and collarbones and you. Lessons like pleasure, like derangement and failure to contend, and truth with a capital T will fail, though no one will know but guts tied shut. I imagine Adam and Eve forcibly led from those cursedly loaded limbs, dragged away and told the scene has no substance but staring at the sun until red turns black and rotten peaches line the ditch bottoms, pits crusted over and juices thick with southern heat, while the living slave, one world above, holds the honor alone.
And yes, we need, we would like some donations to put some oil on that squeaky mic.
WD-40, yeah.
WD-40 to, so yes, the, we could end up having more mics than poets as opposed to the other way around. But now, okay, go ahead, Lou, and, or was it Lou or Allie? It's
Lou.
No. Okay.
Take it away.
All right. My pain has a constant mass, but I can't make any dimension stable. I think about every airport I have ever visited while throwing away the memory of being bore upon varied aircraft. There is a whole constellation I made in the late autumnal sky to tell you no. Where do my needs leave me breathless? Why give me more than just a passing glance? To give me anything more will take you down a dangerous path where my breath and voice are harmonious and seek to bear you upon my solemn waves. Just because the water is gray does not mean you can float without weight. It all clumps together, and so my strings of feeling are cords you choke on in dim daylight that poses as beams of pure sun. But really they are some embittered hybrid between the clouds and the force that seeks them out. Don't you try to use words to undo me. My dictionary is dense, and in the long night I do not fear the looking. The road that sings to me in sad lullaby tones of dreams buried in salty sheets is impossibly straight and runs parallel to the airport. There's no commercial flight, and I knew I wouldn't be carried airborne, but here, in the wet grass, pressed up against barbed wire fences, I learned the precise weight in the center of my soul. I grew familiar with the movements that would take it skyward without acknowledging its presence. You had a garage sale once on an adjacent street, but the tall pines stood in clean rows to shield my hot 12-year-old eyes. Don't you dismiss all this want just because it hasn't had a chance to ripen in the stale sun. Far off light, take me upon the ant corpses that litter the gutter of my pale bed. I put this pain away in the morning only because I know these bare walls cannot contain all that hot conviction. We fear for a fire while mislabeling my flames as something benign. Heat as survival, conflagration as a byproduct of living in weak, tamed ways. The world is always flat, but there is not an end to the edges, so I fall down dead before falling down in any real way. I can't respect the proper order of words for this spell. I pretend to have words, but I don't. I don't. I only have the accumulating corpses of ants on my pillow. They make small dents that feel similar to your dimples. I memorize your hair pattern, but it only makes the forgetting an unbearable burn that sears all my fingerprints from these pads. It's not fair what fine bone structure does to me. I fall on my light. Only because I know she knows my worst secrets. Dead pacing burns a hole in your carpet without you trying for it. Please tell me your name.
Yeah, this is a short one. I'm working on a poem. It's still so small, but it grows into every breathing moment. We found the first words taking shape. Precious, curled up gently in the soft darkness and protective warmth of a new shared language. It's still a little hard to imagine I have my hand in its existence. I'll share it with you proudly, just as soon as it is born.
Okay, sorry, this one's a little longer. One, if someone were to tape Jane speaking for 1 year, the words could be recorded in a perfect sine curve, I'm certain. The universality of not enough and too much fit too closely behind her left ribs. A beat that says, now you're up, Jane. A pulse that constricts ventricles, that asks for blood back from limbs to self-preserve, that says, now you're down, Jane. Not infinity, not an S, a heart monitor that says healthy, stable. The high highs and low lows of a semi-diurnal tide. Hearts can break before breakfast, after all. Two, if John stopped burying himself in the bathtub, everything would be tomorrow. But everything was tomorrow, and if he died tomorrow, what was the reason for ever believing he could come back anyway? In the meantime, he still dreamt of a horse and aqua water, waves too big for anyone to survive. And all he could do was put hands over face to protect himself from the crashing. John wondered at the power of dormancy, of dreams left latent. Three, Jane stood at the edge of a forest, in the soft green before moss turned to sand and entered sea. Find habitat, her heart told her. Find a place for me to exist. I need air to breathe and water to drink. I need to stretch in ecstasy towards another, faster. I want escape and not find it because I'm held so tightly. Walk left, her heart told her. Feet quickened, heart quickened. Drying sand quickened as the tide moved out. Drying as the sun rose, soft to a drop less than 10 feet, concrete from 100 feet above. Quickened, to speed up, to become concrete in beliefs or morals, or cement in a wooden frame. Place your hand in the mold and wait for the seed to quicken in her belly. 4. When the waves came, the people on shore yelled and laughed, watching their towels and shoes swept down the steep summer beach face. They couldn't find footing soon enough, though, and the deepest part of the waves pulled back, pulled feet out to sea before they could run, up through the tiny pebbles. Jane had to swim out past the waves, make it to deeper water before they hit bottom themselves, and peeked out in a triumphant curl, and smashed to the shore. John watched her get caught in one of these giant waves. He'd been tossed from the sea already as it plunged into its own churning mass. If Jane were a rock, the beatings of the waves would polish her, make her perfect, but she was not a rock.
The creaking of the sea.
I only look inside myself to find the inner fault in this configuration of brittle bones that make me an island. And in my lone nights, know the origin is here, in the warm part of the shaking torso. I have gone gangrene with this hideous self-doubt that stunts my limbs and leaves me weak in body. I am not who I want to be to you, and all my dim twistings and misspoken words will not form the proper ringlets to contain you. I can only ever be the stranger you fucked and couldn't bear to look at in full daylight, which seems fair because my bedroom mirror will tell you I cannot face my own countenance in the bare light of a nascent moon pressed flat to my nighttime window. Sometimes I feel so many aches I think I can only vomit in response to all this hideous shaking. What if I had the fucking words for this? I try to prepare for a sparring, but I would only hide these paper-cut arms from you in sleeves of colored paper, like rainbow hues could lend a sense of fantasy to all this dark red bleeding. And I have learned to bear the sickly scars of overwrought nights like a badge of fucking honor, because if these silly shaky lines could scare you off after whole full-felt weekends, I am a monster. And their sickly form under a subway train, lit fluorescent, makes more sense in conveying a story than any meager gleaning you could feel at pit of the stomach first meetings where my hair is too vague to form an impression, for I am foggy on the forebrain that only seeks the proper leanings of endless coils. I can talk about your girlfriend, but no, it will only ever synthesize as an autobiography with the flimsy benefit of flowery language. Because, honey, you are not alone in loving words. I am the pull of the second syllable of undulate. I close my eyes with feeling when I utter the slick syllables that only feel sincere in silken sheets at the intersection of sunset and sex. I know the taste of 1,000 words in a way more intimate than your mouth on mine, and instead of feeling sad, it feels like the space you allow my body to linger. You can put your fingers inside of me, but don't feign trying to inhabit these veins, because it is only my mucous membranes you dare to penetrate with that cowardly sagging flesh. If you hold the right posture, maybe it won't hurt when I set you afire and leave you alone with the expectation of finding a sooty skeleton burning up my bed in the evening.
Periphery. Street lamps still yellow, weak in the city's heaviness, sharp with acrid piss, the stale sweet of forgetting, the last stomach acid. Dark, scattered pillars stuck in dawn's empty, eyes open for ages, wide and tight like bone-spread skin, knuckles of a clenched fist, the color of lamplight. Each caught still and staring on insomnia film. I can see, but can't look. My spine knows those eyes, how they follow like shadows, the same way our hands knew throats and wrists before. The same way our alabaster knights, splitting raw your sable backs, stalked you as prey, bound you to our feverish ankles, and drowned you in your blackness. The same way you know I won't look. Just scorch marks, carbon silhouettes branded on the edge, only shadows in the lamplight. If my eyes were to fall on a grit-branded cheek, a soft lip, I might fill with faces and find myself alone. For a moment, we will be close enough to touch.
Okay, if someone could grab me a tissue, I'm about to bare my soul. Here's where we get real emotional.
We only have 10 minutes left.
This is going to take about a minute and a half, and then I will excuse myself to cry for 8.5 minutes. This poem is called Things I Would Like to Throw at the Streetcar.
Oh, yeah, this one.
This is not a joke. A diaper. I would like to throw a diaper at the streetcar. Vomit. The vomit I once saw come out of a man on the streetcar. I would like to throw that at the streetcar. This disgusting bubble tea. Then more bubble tea. One dog shit in one diaper. I want to throw my blood cup at the streetcar and watch it splatter across the glass. Sanguine justice. Eastern awakening. Items 1 through 9 from Taco Bell. Buddha. Items 1 through 9 from Burger King. Keanu Reeves. Stop 4478. I want to throw stop 4478 through the window. I dream of letting it all go at the street of my wife and child in the middle of the night. Letting it all go. Two branches of the great vehicle, widespread and a hidden third. I'll take you down. I mean it.
What is stop 4478?
A place I will never return.
What bus line?
It's on the streetcar, isn't it?
Oh, it's the streetcar. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. So if you want to call up and donate so our mics will stop squeaking so much, and then we'll have more mics than poets, and that would be great. And you would be able to hear clearly how annoyed they are with the Portland streetcar, which you also have to pay for anyway. So please call 503-231-8187. I am dutifully waiting for your call. Of course, once you call, they'll be able to read poetry because I won't be talking. So feel free to call in and donate at 503-231-8187. Call. Call now.
No.
Call now. All right. I'll let all of you. I mean, we have about 7 minutes left, so go ahead, Lou.
Okay. I have one more. All right. I want to bury this terrible song these birds won't stop singing under the rock in Jenny's front yard. I could put away my want if only these planes would distract me. We could mimic the flight if we put the right things in our body. You have the feeling of airports inside you, and you know the sky in the same intimate way I know the insides of your cheeks. Your skin is a study in narration, and in this light, I swear I could almost touch you. But these hot ghost limbs won't ever know the tight feeling that comes from orbiting your delicate atmosphere. I drink lakes and choke on algae just to forget the taste of your mouth on mine while she watched us. Prove to me that I make you nervous by making a gift or offering at this dim altar. I've said this all before, but don't think it makes these feelings less true. The miles are roped together in the summer, but in the winter I can abide the far spaces, for all that compression means we don't know friction, and I am terrible with burning. You feel like a far-off point in space when the snow falls and collects in the hollows between my bones. I don't ask you to tell me his name, but it is shrieked at me from the sky. I don't know yet how to poison the clouds, but baby, I'm learning. There are dreams that don't feel important until they gather weight in the swollen part of your distended stomach. And upon waking, they feel flimsy, and you cannot fill the empty space in your bed, so you toss it to the floor. But when it crawls underneath us, it knows all the right movements to gain mass and readies itself for the night. It will join me under the sheets.
The future's bright. Wish you were here. It is timeless and it is now. Unfurling silk, evolved in the struggle of the ocean swells, flowing with milk and honey. Yet you are still asleep, and the crescent leans, halfway house for the tired darkness. And dreams are wont to mingle unabashedly with granola and sweet milk. I blow a sneaky kiss to your perfect furrow, yet unspoiled by light, and the morning smells perfect.
As the mic creaks.
Yeah. Starting to like it. My turn. The yellow bulb. The temporary metal of keys to a mattress. Listen to a coil stove warm water under the good bulb. Too much paint drips white on walls. Says where nature stops. At the blue sheets of a third world hospital. They took the radiator. Captain painted the pipe. But the light that hangs looks intentionally 4 inches high. And the self-portraits in the closet only concern the stand-in. Counting cavities in the hallway. Rope burn hot and getting hotter. Warms the spine from tip to tail.
Meow. Cool. So, well, first off, that was Doug Spangle on the phone just now thanking me for promoting his candidacy for Oregon Poet Laureate, which apparently Curtis Whitecarroll, who's the head of the
Ink Noise
series, which I keep forgetting. It was his, he was the one that nominated him. So he'd like to thank both of us for mentioning it. I'd like to mention it again. So if you can find that on Facebook, I'll probably send it out to people. Yeah, there's some, there's a nomination floating out there. And if as many people as possible chime in and try to get Doug nominated as Oregon Poet Laureate. Why the hell not? So I had Lou Woods, Ali Yancey, and Alexis Plank on. Do any of you have any readings coming up?
I don't remember the date, but in April I'm headlining for Ink Noise.
Okay.
And, look out for it, I suppose.
And there are at least two Ink Noises in March. The 7th and the 19th are at Jade Lounge, which your Ink Noise event is probably at Jade Lounge as well, right?
Yes, sir.
I think mine's the 20th.
Of April?
April. So yeah. Then that means mine is earlier in April,
okay. And probably. Lou, do you have any readings coming up or?
No, nothing coming up.
Okay. And then just to remind everyone, Show and Tell Gallery, which I'm part of, has events every Monday at Three Friends Coffee House, Southeast 12th and Ash. Next Monday, Camille Perry, who was also read at the Ink Noise series, will be interviewed as part of the Working Artists Assembly series. There's a bunch of other readings. I believe there's one at Tony's Tavern the first Monday of the month. I believe that's still going on. St. John's I've and talked about it earlier, has a micro slam this Wednesday at 7. There's a reading at Posey's Cafe at 6 on Thursday. And I'm just blabbing on and on. I'm wondering if there's anything to add. And we're in the last minute of Talking Earth. Gremlin time is approaching.
Gremlin time.
Gremlin time. This is Gremlin time approaching, I hope, right? Yes, it is. Okay.
So that means I don't get to sing my song.
God, sing it right now.
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Do you have a song? No.
No, I was just kidding.
Okay. Talking Earth will be back next month. Second and third Mondays of the month. And wow, we only have 15 seconds left. I'd like to thank all three of you for coming on the show. It was a great show.
Thank you.
Thank everyone who pledged or donated or called up. And yeah, please vote for Doug Spangle for Oregon Poet Laureate. Where are you?
Here's.
Yeah. You are listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio for the Northwest. Coming up at midnight is the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. Stay tuned now for the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time.
You are entering a zone of sound and imagery. A landscape of frequency. A vocabulary of modulation. There is the signpost up ahead. Please adjust your chronometers. This is Gremlin Time.
The eyes behind the wide black rubber goggles were cold as flint. In the howling speed turmoil of his motorbike, a BSA M20 doing 70, they were the only quiet things in the hurtling flesh and metal. Protected by the glass of the goggles, they stared fixedly ahead from just above the center of the handlebars. And their dark, unwavering focus was that of gun muzzles. Below the goggles, the wind had got into the face through the mouth and had wrenched the lips back into a square grin that showed big tombstone teeth and strips of whitish gum. On both sides of the grin, the cheeks had been blown out by the wind into pouches that fluttered slightly. To right and left of the hurtling face under the crash helmet, the black gauntlets, broken-wristed at the controls, looked like the attacking paws of a big animal. The man was dressed in the uniform of a dispatch rider in the Royal Corps of Signals. And his machine, painted olive green, was, with certain modifications to the valves and the carburetor, and the removal of some of the silencer baffles to give more speed, identical with a standard British Army machine. There was nothing in the man or his equipment to suggest that he was not what he appeared to be, except a fully loaded Luger held by a clip to the top of the petrol tank. It was 7 o'clock on a May morning, and the dead straight road through the forest glittered with the tiny luminous mist of spring. On both sides of the road, the moss and flower-carpeted depths between the great oak trees held the theatrical enchantment of the royal forests of Versailles and Saint-Germain. The road was D98, a secondary road serving local traffic in the Saint-Germain area. Then the motorcyclist had just passed beneath the Paris-Mantes auto route, already thundering with commuter traffic for Paris. He was heading north toward Saint-Germain, and there was no one else in sight in either direction, except perhaps half a mile ahead, an almost identical figure, another Royal Corps dispatch rider. He was a younger, slimmer man, and he sat comfortably back on his machine enjoying the morning and keeping his speed to around 40. He was well on time, and it was a beautiful day. He wondered whether to have his eggs fried or scrambled when he got back to headquarters around 8. 500 yards, 400, 3, 2, 1. The man coming up from behind slowed to 50. He put his right gauntlet up to his teeth and pulled it off. He stuffed the gauntlet between the buttons of his tunic and reached down and unclipped the gun. By now, he must have been big in the driving mirror of the young man ahead, for suddenly the young man jerked his head around, surprised to find another dispatch rider on his run at that time of the morning. He expected that it would be an American, or perhaps French military police. It might be anyone from the 8 NATO nations that made up the staff of SHAPE, but when he recognized the uniform of the Corps, he was astonished and delighted. Who the hell could it be? He raised a cheerful right thumb in recognition and cut his speed to 30, waiting for the other man to drift up alongside. With one eye on the road ahead and the other on the approaching silhouette in the mirror, he ran through the names of the British riders in the Special Service Transportation Unit at headquarters command. Albert? Sid? Wally? Might be Wally, same thick build. Good show. He'd be able to pull his leg about that little frog bit in the canteen. Louise, Elise, Lisa. What the hell was her name? The man with the gun had slowed. Now he was 50 yards away. His face, undistorted by the wind, had set into blunt, hard, perhaps Slavic lines. A red spark burned behind the black, aimed muzzles of the eyes. 40 yards, 30. A single magpie flew out of the forest ahead of the young dispatch rider. It fled clumsily across the road into the bushes behind a Michelin sign that said that Saint-Germain was 1 kilometer to go. The young man grinned and raised an ironical finger in salute and self-protection. One magpie is sorrow. 20 yards behind him, the man with the gun took both hands off the handlebars, lifted the Luger, rested it carefully on his left forearm,